Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be answering your questions. No promises we'll get to all of them, but since Chris has an opinion to offer on anything, we can promise he'll at least make something up. But first, let's go off topic, starting with some news, announcements, and feedback.
Thanks, Josh.
Anytime.
So last week I announced that I'm going on a weight loss binge. I think that's what you'd call it, right?
Right.
Sure.
Something
like
that. Line. Really?
A
I feel
diet?
Like that's the wrong word
it's
to
the
use.
Word.
I'm binge losing.
But like you're subliminally programming yourself with that word. You've got to be careful.
That's true. That's true. But this week was good.
Okay.
Last week was 215. This week's 211.8.
Wow.
That's down 3.2 pounds.
That's awesome.
Very
for one
nice.
Week.
It's the first week I don't count. I actually don't count any weight loss until I see it for 2 weeks in a row.
Okay.
But
okay.
We'll see.
I see that.
And actually, I did, before we started recording, say that I'm going to join you on this quest.
All right.
And I just went and weighed myself on your scale. So I am currently 183.4 pounds.
All right.
But I hadn't decided before today to do any weight.
What's that in stones?
I don't know. It's like 83 kilograms. And when I tried this for a while in like 2014 and I lost like a bunch of weight and I was 81 kilograms and I was like, that's too much. And now I'm like 83 kilograms. So I put it all back on and then some. So I definitely do need to do this as well.
All right. Well, you're in. Last week I said I wasn't doing Weight Watchers. And then the very next day I'm like, I'm just signing up for Weight Watchers.
Nice.
So you should sign up for the online Weight Watchers.
Yeah,
we can be Weight Watchers friends.
Yeah,
I'm friends with a couple of people at work too. So nice. We kind of motivate each other.
All right.
So, but on more gaming news, actually, this isn't necessarily gaming news, but we liked the results of our contest the holiday contest so much that we're going to do another one.
Oh, yeah.
New contest.
We're calling it the Valentine's Day contest. So, we've had a couple requests for good two-player games. So, we're going to do a show on February 5th. That's when we'll be recording it. You'll hear it on the 7th on two-player games, specifically two-player games that are good for couples.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want you to do is email us. That's how you enter the contest. Email us. Put Valentine's Day contest in the subject and let us know a game that either you like that we haven't talked about or a couples game that you think is really good. And we'll take all of those email entries and do a drawing, and you'll get at least two-player games. Probably
a couple
more.
Games.
What?
A couple games.
A couple games. Yep. Knowing me, I'll probably throw a bunch of extra stuff in the box, too, but you'll get at least two-player games. All of our other standard bonus entries apply, so you get an extra entry if you like us on Twitter or Facebook. You get 3 entries for a share or a retweet, and you get 5 entries for an iTunes review. If I can't obviously compare your iTunes review to your email address, please let me know that you did that so I can give you the proper credit for it. Like I said, the deadline is February 5th, 6 p.m. Central Time. Again, we will not be promoting this over social media. If you're listening, you're in the know, and you are way more likely to win because we're not going to get random people entering that see an email address. So I think that's it for that.
Mm-hmm.
I have one other little bit of news, but I think it falls better under the Kickstarter section. I don't know. We'll get there. It's not a big deal, really, except for, you know, record-breaking things. But
this is just teasing now.
Yeah. Yep. Stay tuned. Speaking of iTunes reviews, Henry5454, thank you for your review. It's very, very nice. You suggested the show topic, most anticipated games of 2017.
That's a really good one.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost our first episode of the year. It's almost our topic for the last episode. We may have to sneak it in. I think next week.
I actually think the only worry about that is me and Kitty will actually have to do some research before the show starts.
Yes. That is one of the big reasons why I didn't do it last week. Because I have a few. Pandemic Legacy 2, the season 2, is definitely one of my most anticipated. There's a number of Kickstarter games that will come out this year that I'm certainly looking forward to.
Right.
But yeah, it's a tricky one because it's hard to know. You just kind of like follow the hype machine and say, oh, everyone else likes it, I must want it too.
Sometimes there's always going to be those sleeper hits that kind of go under the radar, and it's like, wow, everyone loves this game. I think, wasn't Terraforming Mars a bit like that last year?
Terraforming Mars was, that one wasn't even on the radar.
Right, like, exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yep. You know? Like, it was a, like, sleeper, like, oh, no one knew this was going to be.
Yep, you know, and who would have guessed, really?
Right, right.
So, but I'm going to go through my Kickstarter list of what's going to be delivered this coming, well, this year. Mm. It's still hard to think we're in 2017.
I know.
I'm going to say last year, but I'm really meaning going to mean 2015. So use that interchangeably. But I'll go through those Kickstarter games I'm really looking forward to and kind of highlight those as well. Because I think that's where a lot of those sleeper hits can come from, too. Andrew Fayish, he emailed us regarding top five games. We did our topic last week. We're going to ask you guys every week for your feedback on whatever we happen to be talking about. Gave us his top five games. He started out with an honorable mention of Gloom, which is a really cool game. Has either of you guys ever played Gloom?
No. Mm-mm.
So it has transparent cards that you layer on top of things. So the idea is that you're a group of like your family, say family of five, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the first person who gets killed, like all their family killed, ends the game. I've only played it once, so I'm not doing it justice. Right. But it is a really fun game. It has this kind of like dark humor to it.
That sounds cool.
So yeah, very, very good. Let's see. Oh, number five, Snake Oil. Mm. I haven't played that with you guys yet.
No.
But I played a game very similar called Ex Machina. But yeah, it's a similar concept where you have to essentially sell an idea to someone else, right, and someone picks among other people's ideas. I mean, I imagine that's how you play this one, right?
Yeah, basically, one person picks the role or picks a personality to a customer, and then everyone else takes two cards from their hand and puts them together to make a product.
Yes.
So I might be a cheerleader and I'm trying to sell you, I don't know, water gloves.
Right.
You know, why does a cheerleader need water gloves? You know, so it's very improv-y.
I like that.
Like, you really have to kind of get into the idea. It's like, no, you really want this. And then people can interrupt each other and stuff. So it's fun. His number two is Formula Day, which is a racing game. Andrew says he has some bias here. He likes racing. He's a racing fanatic, he says.
Oh, okay.
I have not played this one, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. So I may have to try to pick this one up. Smash Up, which I have every expansion base set, the Big Geeky Box. I've literally played it once.
What type of game are we talking here?
This is a 2-4 player. You take two different 20-card decks and you shuffle them together to form a deck. So each 20-card deck is themed. It could be princesses, it could be aliens, it could be robots, it could be time travelers.
Right, so you might have princess and aliens.
Yeah, so I have alien princesses, and I put those together, and I shuffle that together, and that's my deck that I play with. Oh. And you're trying to basically get points by taking over different bases, and your minions are fighting against each other. I picked this game up when the Munchkin version of it came out, and we played that one a couple times. And then I'm like, I want everything, but I haven't had a chance to get back to it because... You know me. We'll talk more about that.
Our silent nods are translating really well on radio.
Constant conveyor belt of Chris's games. Yeah, it's hard to keep up with.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Munchkin, that's his number two game. And I can honestly say...
Is this a screw your neighbor type game?
It is the ultimate screw your neighbor type game.
Yeah.
I have never played this with the right group of people.
Okay.
Because I think I could have a lot of fun with this.
Yeah, I'll give it a go.
But like, Kitty can't play this game.
I can't play this game. I'm not... Yeah.
No.
So,
yeah, you really have to have a number of people that are willing to just...
Beat up on each other, basically.
I'm trying to stay G-rated here. Yeah. And then his last one was Blood Bowl. Again, a game I haven't played, and he put a little asterisk next to this. Blood Bowl is an absolutely amazing game, but it takes a committed group of players to get full enjoyment out of it. A full season with varied teams is the best way to play it, but it's not a cheap one to get into and tough to convince others to try.
Is this like a Warhammer 40,000 theme thing? Am I just making that up?
I think you might be making it up, but I also think you might not be wrong.
You might. Right.
So
maybe not.
For some reason, I'm thinking football meets maces.
Right, like, yes. Like that sounds about right.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check this out now, though.
Yeah.
So
my curiosity has been piqued.
Yeah. If Andrew recommends something, I have to know what's going on. He also says he likes magic quite a bit. So, you know, but he says it's a little too expensive.
Oh, which gosh, yeah.
I would agree. I really, really liked magic until I realized I was spending like $1,000 every 3 months on it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like, it's, yeah. So I don't play magic anymore.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
We'll talk more about that next episode.
You just spend that. You just reapportion that $1,000 onto different games. I see.
Yes. Now,
but you get more games out of it.
I get more games out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. More different games. And then we have some feedback. This was Trevor Olson sent us a bunch of questions, but he also sent us some feedback first. So I've been talking too much. That means that Josh, you get to read this.
All right. Trevor Olson says, "I love the show and what you guys are doing. I've only been able to listen to a few of your recent episodes so far, but I am the fan of the quality and variety of the people involved. I'll be moving closer to work, thus eliminating 2+ hours of driving. But your show will survive the upcoming podcast purge." That's awesome.
Ooh, I know, isn't that awesome?
Compliment.
Yeah. So the 1 hour time frame fits perfectly, especially since you release an episode every week. I'm still shocked at how much effort and planning that must take. If only he knew how little we do. Yes. I feel bad about giving that away, but never mind. Your off-topic and on-topic sections work really well and feel like a conversation amongst friends, which totally is. Please avoid the newscast segments that have to be brought up every single time. Forcing your conversation to fit into a mold would make the conversation too rigid and more of a checklist.
Yeah, Chris.
What? No. It's all good. I don't think he's talking about our segments.
No, he's not. No.
No, I think, I mean, we do put a decent amount of time talking in the podcast, so that's where we put our prep. I don't know. We've mentioned it before. I do some show notes. Our off-topic segment actually is far more prepared for than the on-topic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On-topic is like, okay, here's the topic, ready, go. you know, sometimes we'll have points.
With mixed results.
But no, I think we just have a pretty decent chemistry. We play off of each other and stuff.
Definitely.
But so yeah, we'll get to more of Trevor's questions because actually it's some really good ones in our on-topic segment.
Now, see, I kind of realized I missed out a news and announcement. So can I slip this in here?
Absolutely.
Is that possible? Yeah. So basically, I've discovered this amazing new podcast, which isn't a gaming podcast. It's called Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a group of Chicago improvisers making up, kind of improvising every week with set characters and just world building. So this guy has fallen through into this fantasy land, very D&D style,
yep,
where there's goblins, wizards, you know, mm-hmm, but it's just a normal guy who's gone there and he's kind of reporting on this world, and he has new guests each time who are from this magical land, and he learns more and more. But they're very, very consistent week to week about what they build. If they say something in one episode,
they carried it forward.
They always stick to the world that's been built.
They're basically building a world in this podcast. They're at episode like 88 right now.
It's
all improv.
Yeah.
So as soon as someone says something,
it exists.
Yeah.
And people like recall back those things time and time again. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it is a really good podcast. Josh texted us actually last week saying, hey, you should check this out. And I've been starting at episode one and working my way forward. So
best way to do
it. They're short. At least the beginning, they were short form, 15 to 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. And so far, they haven't really gone over the 30-minute mark. So it's good. It's good length.
Yep. So Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're giving them total, you know, what are we plugging them?
We're plugging them for free. They haven't asked us.
Yeah.
And hopefully, if Chris is able to find the time for editing, he will slip in a little excerpt, 30-second excerpt, right now.
I'm not going to edit.
Oh, you said I couldn't play this thing. I'm going to play this at the end then.
No. I will put it in for next show.
All right.
Fine. We'll remind people. Give them double plug.
All right. And
let's see. We're back up to the segment of games and Kickstarters, new games and Kickstarters. So I actually didn't get a lot of games this week until today.
I was going to say, wait a second.
Yeah, you totally got some games this week.
It was accidental. I'm like, oh, the only thing I got was Fields of Green, which is a Kickstarter fulfillment, which I like having all these Kickstarters because they just random games show up. And I'm like, oh, look, this game. So we did not play Fields of Green today.
No.
It's not our game of today, even though it could have been, because I said, Josh, Kitty, I understand that I always make you play new games. And you always want to play something more than once so you can get better at it. Mm. So you guys get to decide. Anything you want to play, we'll play it. And they chose XCOM.
Which we had not
which
played.
We've not played.
We've been trying to play for a while, though.
Yes.
I've been really excited about it for a long time.
Josh in particular, yeah.
So we didn't play Fields of Green, but we will because it looks like a really cool game. It's a worker placement, point salad game. You're trying to build the best farm you can with government aid. I believe that's what the excerpt said. So I'm excited for that one.
Mm-hmm. We had another game today, too, that I made you guys play. Yeah.
We're not there yet.
Oh.
Sticking to the segments. Otherwise, this becomes too organic.
Oh, right. Right.
But I will go really quickly over these ones because it doesn't matter.
We're all out of order.
We're totally out of order. Memoir 44, this game came out in 2004. It's supposed to be one of the best two-player games ever. And since we're going to do a two-player game episode, ooh, I wanted to pick it up and try it out. I also picked up Codex, which is a new dueling card game. So it's also two players. It's not collectible. It's not a living card game. It's all the cards are here you go, that they're sold in individual boxes. So you can get the core set. You can get like, here's this for this and, you know, extra things. They do have a deluxe edition where everything is in the box. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 or something like that. But they say that this is it. It's a full game. There's no reason to have more cards for it or expansions. And it's been getting really good reviews, especially from like Tom Bassel from the Dice Tower. He loves this game. Right. So I'm like, all right, pick this up. I did kickstart Demon Espionage. It's a social deduction game for 3 to 6 players, which is interesting. 3 to 6 is kind of on the low side for social deduction, but it looks very mechanical in nature. So I think this might be a light intro social deduction small group game, and I wanted to check that out. And then my news I was talking about at the beginning, Kingdom Death has closed. It was like a 40-day Kickstarter. And 12 million plus is what it closed at.
Whoa.
It is now officially the highest funded game in Kickstarter history.
So why is this so high?
So the actual amount was $12,393,139 with 19,264 backers. So if you do the math, it's around $550 per backer.
Oh, wow.
On average. So I did not back at that level, but even at a moderate level, I still backed it way more than I should have and more than my weight. I'll give it. That's my clue. There's so much in here. And the fulfillment goes from this year out to 2020. Whoa. Like some of the products that you got now, you won't actually get till 2020. So there's so many different things and pieces and parts.
What kind of game is this?
So this is essentially a world in a box. So think of it as like a role-playing game where all the mechanics are handled for you. You're not doing anything. But you play the same characters. Actually, you don't even play the same characters. You play different characters. You're playing almost like a settlement. So there's this non-combat where you're building up your settlement where you have this small group of characters.
Right.
And then you'll choose characters to go out on missions. And they'll go out and like fight monsters and bring back bones and hide and stuff to build better things to come back. Well, the people in your settlement are building up buildings and whatever the case is.
Wow.
So I have not actually played this game, but this is the 1.5 version. It's been out for a few years that people have played the base one. And so that generated some buzz. Mm. The miniatures are supposed to be just like hobbyist quality. Wow. Like you have to assemble them. I believe they're resin, but whatever they are, they come in pieces that you put together. You can paint them if you want to. I don't plan on doing that, but maybe I'll fall in love with the game and just be addicted to it. But I think that's definitely news. Exploding Kittens held the record before this, and that was a little over 8 million.
Whoa, it's beat it by a lot then.
But yeah, it was pretty obvious that was going to happen. They had 5 million in the first like week or so.
Right. Wow.
So it was a big deal. All right, now Kitty, game of the day.
Okay, now the game of the day. Which we sort of accidentally started already. But so we started with I think it was in my top five. It might have been my number one. It was one or two.
Yeah.
So this is Labyrinth. It used to be called The Amazing Labyrinth. But now if you buy it on Amazon, it's just plain Labyrinth.
Yeah, not quite as amazing anymore.
A race for treasures in a moving maze. So this was, if you want a more in-depth description, you can head back over to our top five episode last week.
Give a quick
But yeah, it's basically a maze. It looks kind of like a little dungeon. You've got little treasures hidden in the dungeon, and you slide the pieces around on your turn. Like, you have one piece that doesn't fit in the board, and you have to push it in at the beginning of your turn to try to move yourself to the treasure through the maze.
Is this, let's see, 3, 5, like 8 by 8, and then the middle three on each?
Might be less. Oh, yeah, it might be 10. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's, well, it's,
or a 8 by 8. Yeah, five. I think that makes sense, yeah.
I think it's 9 by 9. Well, there's three paths on each one that are movable, on each side that are movable. Right. And when you push those through, it pushes all of the other tiles through.
Is it seven then?
We're all trying to count in our head. So
I know.
One, off, on, off, on, off, on. Seven.
Six, seven. I think it's seven.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter.
There's a number of them. It's seven.
But it was really fun. Like,
that was the most entertaining part of the podcast so far.
Definitely.
We all tried to
knocked it out of the park. No, but the game was really fun because it was so easy to pick up. But then there was a lot of strategy involved. And, you know, it was hard to think, oh, where am I going to make this move? Surely there must be one slide I can do that's really going to help me and hopefully screw someone else over at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, when I saw it, I was like, it looks interesting, but Kitty, you're right. This is actually a really fun game.
It is a fun game. It's a great game to play with kids because the rules are not difficult. It's maybe a page, like one page of directions at most.
Yeah. Setup is a minute, if that. About a minute.
Yeah. You throw down the tiles in whatever order and you deal the cards. That's it. Yep. You're done.
Yeah, because so everyone has a stack of cards in front of them, and the cards have pictures that match pictures that are on the tiles. And you want to move your little player to that tile. And nobody else knows what you're going for unless you say, I have to go all the way across the board to go get that map over there. But, you know, the cards do what they do. I did not win. And
well, not only did you get really unlucky, but you started telling us what you're going for. You're like, I'm trying to go for the genie. I'm like, well, you shouldn't have told us that.
But right?
By the time I got to the genie, which was my second, you guys both had six cards in front of you. I had one card in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah, you were kind of already out of it.
I was actually kind of pleading, just let me get the genie. But no, they didn't. They did not let me get the genie.
We're ruthless.
You should know us by now.
Yeah.
So, but no, I thought it was a really good game, and it's available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely say if you're looking for like a fun family game,
it's not very expensive. Yeah. Yep.
So this would even be a really good couples game, honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because it's 2 to 4 players.
Yep. You know, you can accidentally screw people over, but most of the time you're trying to get yourself where you want to go. So you're not trying to like make that move that messes someone else up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really liked it. So then we played XCOM afterwards.
Mm-hmm. We did.
We put it on the tutorial mode. Now, XCOM's been out for probably 2 or 3 years now. I picked up the expansion today. So we first needed to learn how to play the base game before we could learn the expansion. I've played this before, but it's been a while. And the XCOM instruction book is 2 pages. That's the whole thing. It says, here's the board. Here are the cards. This is what you do. Now go download the app and it'll talk you through the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you set it on the tutorial, it'll walk you through everything in the game and teaches you everything to do, which made our first turn take about, I don't know, an hour.
It was a long time.
It seemed like a long time.
It did feel like a long time.
We were learning the game. But as soon as we got to the second turn, it was like very fast. Third turn was very fast. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We did stop it on the third turn just because we wanted to make sure we had time to record tonight. But we will revisit it. We will play it. Mm-hmm. We will play it with the expansion.
I'm still keen to get a full gaming because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Like Sydney was hovering and saying, I love this game so much. So, and I was
like, we need to do this and do that.
Yeah.
Yep. So she was, when I was playing 2 roles because we're only playing 3 players. And one of the roles I was playing was essentially the accountant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's her favorite role in the game is to play the accountant role.
Nice.
Uh-huh.
So she always yelled at me because I'd be the researcher and I'm like, I need more scientists. Give me more money for research. She's like, you can't have more money, but I want more money.
And we should mention she is an accountant in real life, which is why she loves that role so much.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So, all right. To make sure we have some time to answer your questions, let's do that. So,
in this episode, we're answering your questions. Some of these are pretty long, so let's see how many we can answer and how many Chris decides to turn into full episodes.
Well, I will tell you the first one's going to be a full episode.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, emailed us, this is actually a couple weeks ago, talking about expansions. And he wants to know, you know, how much is too much? Should you, like, if is it your favorite game, where you draw the line? Is it financial? Is it, you know, does it make it too complicated? And there's so much there regarding gaming expansions that I am going to promote this to a full episode.
Nice.
It won't be next week's episode. It may be the following or the one after that. We might throw the anticipated 2017s in the middle.
Right.
So we already know what next episode's going to be. But this is going to be its own episode. I'm going to... Because there's a few of them. Well, Munchkin and Smash Up, he mentioned specifically. Like I said, Smash Up, I own every single expansion, even though I haven't actually played the game more than once or twice. Munchkin, I've never really gotten into, again, just because of the game group. But... if there's Cosmic Encounter, I own 6 expansions to it. I've played it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I played it in my childhood a lot. I played it once in the last year, you know. So I'm a bad test of that, people. I'm not normal.
I'm on the other side. We'll balance each other out.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm glad you've done that, because actually I haven't, I don't think I played many game expansions. I think I've played a couple of games that you have that you've just had the expansion and I didn't realize.
Yep.
But this will give us an opportunity for me to get involved with a few expansions.
Yep. And different expansions are, you know, it's interesting. Some expansions add a whole new element to the game.
Right.
Some just add more of what's already there.
Right.
The more of what's already there, those are easy expansions to add in. The new elements, that starts changing the game maybe more than someone wants it to. Maybe they really like the base game. So there's just a lot to talk about there.
Right.
So Andrew, you will have your own episode. I think this might be your second full episode. but... keep the good ideas coming and we'll keep doing episodes for you. So Nate, not sure what his last name is, but we're just going to call him Nate. You know who you are. sent us in a few different questions. We're going to not cover all of these right now because I don't think we're going to have enough time, but we really like these questions. So we're going to probably add a your question section to the off topic. Maybe just pick a question every week.
It's a good idea.
Answer that one question. So you can keep sending us questions. We'll keep using questions that we got for this episode as for that as well. But first, Nate asked us, what's our individual origin stories? Those are a little bit longer and involved, but episode 0, you can hear about Josh and I. Yep. And episode 4, when we add Kitty, you'll hear about Kitties. We also did a little bit more in episode 19, our meta episode. We talked a little bit about that. But I am going to go into our group origin story, because this one I think is... I don't know that we've covered it.
I don't know we've covered
in
it.
Full.
And it's a fun one.
Yes.
I think.
So, once upon a time in a land. No.
In Chicago.
Yeah, it's Chicago. So, Kitty and I actually, this is where the podcast started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kitty and I, this was what, 2-3 years ago?
Well, if we're even starting with our origin story, it starts with Spencer.
Well, all right. If we go way back to. Yeah. Yes. All right. We'll go, Kitty. Yeah.
I'm starting at the very beginning.
All right.
As I was taught, a story should go that way.
Fair.
So it started with Spencer playing D&D with you.
Yep.
And we were looking for a new place to live, and you were looking for a new place to live. And we, like, I had never met you. And we ended up being roommates 2 weeks later.
Yeah. My favorite thing is, so I told Spencer, I'm like, hey, I'm, you know, I just want a better place. Don't have any roommates right now, but, you know, you guys are looking for a place to live. And Spencer's like, yeah, that sounds great. I think Kitty will probably want to meet you first, though.
You know.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Smart move, Spencer.
Yeah, I heard behind the scenes, though, Kitty's like, I don't want to live with some random strange guy. And then we went to lunch, and Kitty's like, okay, we can live together.
Yeah. Yeah. Good we workers. Can gang up on Spencer together.
Yep. So, and then, so,
yeah.
Yeah. And
what, like 3 years after that, we had split part ways for a while, and then we were back living together.
So they were engaged when they were living together originally. They got married. When they got married, they went out and got their own apartment. So there was no doubt, completely reasonable.
Yep.
Then we decided to buy a building together.
Yep.
And then that building was under construction, and we lived in Chris's spare bedroom for way longer than we should have.
So, but while we were there, Kitty was listening to podcasts before me. She actually got me into podcasts. And she suggested that we should do a podcast together. And it should be funny, and it should be awesome, and we're going to talk about all the greatest things. And we even created a podcast name and a website and emails. It was called Future Culture.
Yep.
Wow. And that's as far as we got.
Yeah.
What was, I'm interested now, what was Future Culture going to be?
We weren't really sure.
We never really got that far.
It's a cool name, though. I'm sure there would have been some great topics.
Yeah, we faded way before it even became podfadable. Okay. So, fast forward a little bit. Gloria, who is Josh's significant other, mm-hmm. I have known her since she was 12 years old, I think.
She's now 30.
Yeah. So a really long time. Yeah. I lived with her sister in college. I was actually working with her sister's boyfriend. Her sister's Claudia. Her boyfriend at the time was Ryan. I was actually working with Ryan, and Claudia got out of college a year early and moved to Kalamazoo, but wanted to like not live with Ryan right away. So I'm like, well, if she's looking for a place to live, I could use another roommate and we could share the rent.
This happens a lot. You're just randomly moving in with the people you meet.
That's how you really get to know somebody.
It's true. It's very true.
So it was actually kind of an awkward conversation with Ryan. I'm like, so Ryan, I know your girlfriend just moved to town. Can she live with me? it went a little different than that, but he came back with, oh yeah, that seems like a great idea.
Yeah. And it was, luckily.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. So Claudia moved in with my friend Eric at the time. And so I got to know Claudia really well. I got to know Ryan really well. So around that time, I got to know her family, which is when I met Gloria. Mm-hmm. Fast forward up until, the first time I met you was in Chicago.
Yeah. So I met Gloria abroad, and then we met Chris when I was visiting. And then we decided to move here this year. And Chris very kindly offered us to live in his apartment in his spare room for a couple of months. As he often does with many people, which is amazing, and really helped us out. But then we started talking about podcasts, and you were saying, hey, you're into games and board games. Well, why don't we start a podcast? Because you'd had this conversation with Kitty many years ago, mm-hmm. and you thought, wait, I should totally do this.
Yeah. Well, that time too, the podcast, number one, I said, you have a British accent. You'll make a compliment.
It does, yeah.
But at that time, the podcast was just going to be just the two of us, and we were going to call it something like New Player, Old Player.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I've been playing for a long time, and Josh has just started playing games, so we were going to kind of work off that dynamic. But I'm like, you know, if we keep doing this and it's successful, eventually we're both going to be old players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need to find a different twist to it.
Definitely.
If you listen to our first, I don't know, 5 or 6 episodes as we go through that, you'll kind of see where we sort of started in one direction and went to another, because like, well, let's just talk about one game ad nauseum, you know, until people are so sick of hearing about it that they never want to play it again.
Yeah.
And then I came.
And then Kitty came. Well, because
fresh air.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, so we were doing a podcast, and then we're talking to Kitty, and I don't know exactly how it came up, but I'm like, wait a minute, Kitty.
We were pretty drunk.
I was.
Probably, yeah, I was going to say, I was getting texts at like 2 or 3 a.m.
It was on my birthday.
It was your birthday. So I'm talking to Kitty, and I'm like, oh my God, you should totally be part of this, because I forget how much of a gamer Kitty is.
Yeah.
So
and I was in the woods in central Illinois getting texts at 3 a.m. in the tent. Like, hey, can Kitty be part of our podcast? I'm like, yeah, of course.
So that's our origin story.
Yeah, there you go.
Warning, some of these may not talk about games. Some of them do, though. Let's find another one here. They got great origin. The majority of time I play with casual gamers. So what is your go-to casual gamer gateway game and why? Mm. So I have a couple. Do you guys?
You start.
All right. So Splendor is probably my number one go-to if I want to play what I consider a board game, even though there's no actual board there, but a little bit more depth. I can teach that game to just about anyone, and they will have fun with it. And I've said this before, it's mostly because Splendor doesn't require skill, but it feels like it does. Right. You can always be in the running in that game if you're just kind of going through and doing your best move on any given turn. But it's still fun because it still feels like, oh, I was so close. If I'd only gotten that one other card or something like that.
Right.
So it's a lot of fun, and it plays 4 players. I've played this with my parents in Sydney. We played this with her parents. You know, both are just kind of like, oh, what do you guys want to do? It's like, oh, let's play this game. It'll make it easier to not talk. And every single time, we played at least 4 times in a row. So that's one of my major go-tos.
I like Ticket to Ride. It's a pretty popular one, I think. Recently got my sister into that one. So me and Eve have been Ticket to Riding.
Nice. And Ticket to Ride is like, I haven't played it yet, but there's trains involved, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it's cards like a, and... Yeah.
It's mostly colored railroad wooden sticks.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah. Okay.
Cool. I'll have to try that.
Building so it's like railroad a classic empire, sort of.
Yeah. Classic gateway game, isn't it?
Yeah, Ticket to Ride is probably as gateway game-ish as Catan is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's... Actually, I think there's more expansions to Ticket to Ride because they have different maps, mm-hmm. which may introduce different rules as well.
Right, right.
So essentially, you draw some cards and you have a route. I need to get from New York to Boston.
Yeah.
It takes me 3 train lengths to get there. If I can complete that route, I score the points for it. And other people can block you on the way, and you can maybe try to get through a longer way.
Because I actually downloaded that on the mobile version mm-hmm. whilst I was in the car with Gloria, because I was thinking, oh, I need some sort of gateway game that I can try and play with her. But for some reason, the board looked really dry, and then I was like, not sure. And so I switched very quickly to word games, because I know that Gloria loves word games.
I would say this Ticket to Ride is a little bit, needs to be tactile to start with.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Catan. Catan's great on the iPad, but you really want to feel those pieces. You really want to feel those cards if you're going to mm-hmm. introduce a new player to it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, yeah, I mean, my go-to games are actually normally social games, mainly because when I'm encountering non-gamers, it's in a social setting. I'm like, it's mm-hmm. like a party or something. I'm like, what game can we play? So I might go for something like Werewolf, which is a social deduction game, or I might go for something like... a new game that I just got recently would be a great gateway game. I bought Gloria Letter Tycoon. And it's you're essentially just making words and trying to make the longest word possible on each turn you play. But there's some special cards that have some strategy around them. And so it starts to get someone into the mode of thinking about using cards to play a bit of strategy here and there. So I really like that one. That's good.
And even though I don't like word games personally, they are really good gateway games mm-hmm. because everybody knows words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a skill you already know.
Yep.
Just like the Labyrinth game that we played would be a great mm-hmm. gateway game because, you know, it's a maze. Everyone's seen a maze before
yep.
and mm-hmm. it's sliding a piece. There's nothing, no new rules to learn.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a couple rules and you're good to go. One other honorable mention I'll say is Deception, Murder in Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
It has a lot of cards, but you just throw it down and you just play around and everyone just figures it out right away.
Yep.
And they always want to play it again.
Definitely. My honorable mention would be Insider.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yep. Insider, if you guys don't have this, it's relatively new. And mm-hmm. quite honestly, you don't even need the game, but you should anyway, because it's just this tiny little box and it's so cute. Mm-hmm. And you have the great cards. Get this game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It will.
I'm going to buy a copy for sure.
Always come in handy. There's not a group that you can't play this game with, mm-hmm. and everyone will be able to be involved, including kids. Like, as long as the kids can read a word.
We played it with kids at Christmas. Yeah. It was fine. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think you could probably go down to 7 on that easily. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. just reading level. You know, is all you really need. So great, great game. Let's see, Nate. You have a few other questions here that we're going to promote to the start of other episodes. We're going to go over to some questions from Trevor. The first one here. I like. When do you allow a player to take back a turn?
I would say if it's your significant other, almost always. Always. If you want to remove the chance of an argument.
Yep.
I think I've seen you do that. I've seen you be more generous to Sydney than other people, I think. Well, maybe that's just in my head. I don't know.
I think he's pretty generous to me because he knows I'm going to throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think it's always okay to take back a turn.
Yeah.
Sure.
As long as the next turn hasn't started that affects the reason why you want to take back the turn.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you do, like, it's kind of the, like, did you let your piece go?
Right.
Like, you know, you're making your move, mm-hmm. and then you, like, sit back for a second and go, oh, no, I didn't want to do that. Like, you see the consequences before anyone else makes an action.
Yeah,
go ahead. Take that back.
Yep.
It's still your turn, really.
You know, if you're playing tournament chess, or, you know, tournament magic or something where it's like, okay, the competition is on the line,
mm-hmm.
then it's really up to you as to whether or not, you know, it's like, okay, I want to play hardcore. No, I'm not going to let you take your turn back because that could affect how I could win.
Sure.
But in a casual game, I always see it as an okay thing to do. There may be exceptions where it's like, okay, it took you 35 minutes to take your turn the first time. No, you're done. Move on.
Yep.
But for the most part, I think that it's usually a good thing, especially mm-hmm. when teaching new players.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to bring new players in, be mm-hmm. nice to them.
Yeah.
It also helps you kind of learn the strategy of the game to try, like, to see what happens a couple different ways. It's like, oh, if I do this and this, like, oh, no, I'm going to take that back and then try a different way.
Yep.
use my, because usually you have like a couple different things you can do on a turn in most games.
Yep.
And like sometimes order matters and like, oh, I wanted to do this first. And like Pandemic, we fudge it a lot. We're like, oh yeah, like I did three actions here and oh yeah, I cured this while I was back there two moves ago.
Yeah. You know, so and that's the kind of thing, as long as the table agrees that that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it's good. And it makes it a more fun experience.
Exactly. And that you should always be thinking, what's the most fun thing here and for everyone?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So now, if you are going to play the super strict, you can't take back your moves, you should mention it up front, saying, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to play a serious game. When you say you're done, you're done. No, no take backs. Because then at least then people are in the mindset of, oh, we're in competition mm-hmm. mode.
Yep.
But otherwise, if it's a casual game, treat it as such, is my mm-hmm. opinion. Nice. Let's see. Favorite board game art you've seen. Kitty, do you have any favorite?
I feel like I know what yours is going to be.
I don't know what mine's going to be.
I think I know what she's thinking yours is going to be.
All right. Somebody say what you're thinking.
So Scythe has amazing.
Scythe has very good art.
Was that what you were thinking?
That's what I was thinking. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's this new game last year, was it, that came out?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just stunning sort of steampunky, but also kind of watercolor folksy charm to it as well.
Kind of like a Soviet kind of feel to me.
Soviet with mechs.
Yeah.
Like, 50s Soviet with mechs involved. Now, mm-hmm. I will say that the board itself to me is a little bit bleh. It's kind of washed mm-hmm. out a lot of earth colors. It's really the encounter cards mm-hmm. that have like images you'd put on your wall, mm-hmm. you know, type of thing.
And it really tells part of the story, even just the art itself.
Yep.
There's a kind of weird stuff going on, like mechs like flamethrowing some sheep or something. And,
yep. You know. So, I mean, art for me is really, really subjective. Like, I guess that's just kind of rhetorical, right? Art is subjective.
Well, I mean, I think the point you're making is that, like, for instance, Gloria cannot stand the style of anime characters.
Right.
And so if anything had that style, she'd just be turned off instantly. Whereas I love that. Like, I'm really into anime.
I
see it, I'm like, oh, this is awesome, just for that reason.
Well, I think the Chibidze art, like the big head characters, like Arcadia Quest.
Right.
I love the art in Arcadia Quest, but it's very cartoony art.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly not like these oil paintings on cards, but this the art that I really, really enjoy it. Trevor mentions here, you know, Mysterium and Dixit are, you know, kind of off the table because everyone thinks the arts on them is so good.
Yeah.
They're a particular style of art. What mm-hmm. they can do, what they do with that art is really actually quite phenomenal. You build in so many ideas into these images.
Mm.
But I wouldn't want to hang any of that on my wall, I don't think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Like, even the picture Codenames that you recently got, the picture version of Codenames, I really enjoyed the art on that, and I thought it was really clever how they mixed different concepts. But again, I wouldn't necessarily hang any of it on my wall, like you say. Yeah.
I also really liked the art from Oceanos.
Yeah.
I thought that was very little, cute. Yeah. It was like being in a children's book.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's so many different styles. Just, and
yeah.
I will say, so I've been in game design for years and years and years. And
Video game design. Right.
Mm-hmm. And on that, I was like, it's really all about the gameplay. I'm a programmer and a game designer, so mm-hmm. I'm like, it's all about the gameplay. It's all about the gameplay. But one thing you realize is the gameplay will keep someone there. The art is what gets them to buy the game.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So now I really, I mean, and this isn't recent. This is many years now that I'm like, you know, art is amazing and it really adds to a game. You have mm-hmm. to have a good mechanic underneath mm-hmm. it, but if you don't have good art, that can ruin a good mechanic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's why everyone was so crazy about Lara Croft when it first came out, right? I mean, amazing art and just amazing
art.
Good
art assets.
You know, just, you know, it has to be a hook, like you say.
Yep. Well, I mean, one of the games, Twilight Imperium, is one of the highest rated games on Board Game Geek, and I just can't get past the art style, I mean, the lack of art style in that game to, like, make myself interested enough to learn it, even though I've been told so many times how great it is.
Mm.
So it's that just goes to show, it's like, you have to be in that mindset. I bought Memoir 44 today. One of the reasons I haven't bought it earlier is because it's a World War II game. Right. And I just don't like that style of art. And
I'm actually pretty excited about it because it's a World War II game. So.
Well, we will be playing Tanks on Tanks. Yay. Let's see. When do you realize... All right. What do you do when you realize that you've been playing incorrectly. Start over, start using a new rule, play as before.
I mean, it really depends, doesn't it? I mean, we had this exact situation, me and mm-hmm. Gloria, when we were playing this Letter Tycoon game. So it was a new game, and we tried to read through the rules, and we obviously hadn't realized, oh, you can't make two words on your go. That's a special power that's given by this special card that came out later in the game. But at that point, we were kind of like, okay, we were both abusing the rule. Yep. And so no one had a clear advantage. So mm-hmm. we don't have to scrub this whole game. You know, we just carry on as we were. So that worked for that game.
Yep.
So did you keep making tours, or from then on, did you stick with one?
Because the special card come out and it was only for one player, mm-hmm. we then switched to, okay, only that player can do it now because they have the special card.
Yep. Yeah.
And that was fine. You know, mm-hmm. we were both happy with that.
Yeah, that's kind of my test too, is how many people benefited from doing the rule wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If we were all kind of equally there, then we don't change it.
Yeah.
If somebody really benefited from it, why did that happen? Is it just if they were cheating, then yeah, but mm-hmm. normally that's not the case. Normally someone just really benefited from it. So then what I'll do is say, okay, we'll just keep this rule throughout so everyone has the chance to benefit from
mm-hmm.
it.
That's a good point.
But if everyone's already equal and just like, oh, we can change this, we can fix this going forward, go ahead and fix it going forward. So it really just, how much does it affect the play? Now, I almost never start over. Unless mm-hmm. we're, actually, I don't know that I've ever started over. Because honestly, if you're getting the rules wrong, it's probably your first playthrough. And it's better to just keep playing through and get other things wrong.
I was going to say, you're probably making other mistakes too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say if it's your first play, just keep pushing through and call it a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. One more from Trevor. All right.
I'm so excited about this one.
We're gonna
She's
do
been
one.
Waiting for this question to come out.
Let's say you're an evil mastermind with unlimited money, etc., and you build a board game themed trap to kill pesky do-gooders. What game would you choose?
Wow, that's a tough one. Go on. Didn't someone have an idea for this already?
I feel like Clue is the obvious answer.
Okay.
Well, that's almost a boring
it's almost
answer, right?
Yeah. So now I'm trying to come up with a better answer, but like Clue is just such a good answer.
Well, see, I'm trying to think, are you putting people in a board game or are you making them play a board game?
Well, he says a themed, board game themed trap, which is the bit that really threw me.
So,
he's building like a mouse trap.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Mouse trap. Mouse trap is the obvious answer.
My other one was going to be some sort of like real life Monopoly, because essentially they would just
kill them from boredom.
Exactly. And the arguments that ensue, they would just kill each other and lose sight of whatever do-gooding goal they had to stop you.
Yeah, I don't know. There was, I think the game was just called Adventure or Adventure Quest or something that had like the rolling ball that from the Indiana Jones movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a good one, but that kind of, they stole that from Indiana Jones. I mean, not stole, used.
Mm.
but yeah.
Borrowed.
I really like this question. If I was going to design a board game that they would have to play, I would design a game that had a win condition that you could never actually get to. So you had to keep playing
this, This is why I suggested Monopoly. No one ever finishes the damn game of Monopoly.
It's true.
But
you know, just looking around the room, Labyrinth, I feel like, would make a really good one.
Labyrinth would
a gigantic
make a good one.
Moving maze that they're all trapped in.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly you're just in a
monsters are there and they'll eat you.
Yeah. It's like that movie Cube that came out.
It is like Cube. Yeah. But not like Hypercube, because that was like just Hypercube. Bad.
Oh, I didn't know there was a Hypercube. Oh, okay.
There's like three. There's Cube Zero.
I think mine would be 80s themed as well. I think it would be something like Lawnmower Man, where you get sucked into some weird virtual reality world. If you've ever seen Lawnmower Man from the 80s.
Okay, let's move on to Tony asked some questions. These are last minute questions too.
Mm.
This first one I like a lot. When thinking of buying a game, where are your best and favorite resources that you use to decide what game to buy?
Mm.
Now, I buy a lot of games.
Yeah, you're the go-to on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I'm going to see, you guys have to buy some games sometimes.
That's
like
true.
Besides me, is there any other research places you guys go to?
See, at the moment, because I'm relatively new, I'm going off like the conventions we went to. Mm-hmm. I mean, now that I'm aware of the Dice Tower, if I'm interested in a game, if I've come across it somehow, someone's recommended to me, I'll probably go and see the review by them or someone else that's known as a trusted reviewer.
Yep.
On YouTube or something. And then I can actually see the game, kind of the pieces, it being moved around, what people thought of it. Yeah. So maybe like a video review thing I would look for.
Okay.
I have kind of two ways of getting games, and that is I get a lot of games as gifts. I'm just like known as somebody who like, oh, Kitty, she likes games. We'll buy her a game for Christmas. So I pick up a lot that way, and that can be very hit or miss, but I sometimes end up with some really fun stuff that I never would have bought for myself.
Yep.
And then I usually only buy a game after I've already played it. So like a friend had it and played it. And
so basically Chris is where you get all of your information.
No, my friend Amy has taught me a few games. She's the one who introduced me to Carcassonne. I'm very excited about my new expansion I'm going to play.
Yeah. Did we mention? I got Kitty an expansion for, well, we're going to call it for Christmas because her Christmas present didn't ever come in on time. But the Princess and the Dragon expansion for Carcassonne.
Very excited about it. So she introduced me to that one. Our friends Rob and Jess are big gamers. They play a lot of games. We've done stuff with them.
Nice.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. And like Board Game Geek is like a very trusted source on the internet, right? Yeah. I mean, would Board you recommend game, that as a place to go for new games?
So how I do basically my research is, I listen to a number of different gaming podcasts, including our own. I don't get a lot of new information from our own. When I do, it's weird. But anyway, Dice Tower is probably the one that I get the most information from. Mm. And they do a little bit like what we do because we stole it from them. I mean, we use it from them. They bring up a game that they played and they talk briefly about the structure of it and whether they liked it or not. And that can tell me, it's like, oh, that sounds familiar, or that sounds interesting to me, or it doesn't. Mm. I will say about 25% of the games they mention are games where I'm like, okay, I need to go and seek that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I hear people mentioning the same game over and over and over again, such as like Memoir 44, I will just, I didn't look at any kind of how to plays or anything. I should have probably looked up and said, let me watch a playthrough.
Right.
But the truth of it is, if it's not somebody who's very good at doing playthroughs, they may put you off from a really good game just because they're so, it's so tedious to watch them play it that you think it's going to be a tedious game. So I just go out and buy it because I've heard enough people talk about it that it's worth having.
I wanted to make a quick shout out to the one reviewer that you said you do watch a fair amount. Was it Sit Down, Shut Up or something?
No, Watch It Played.
Watch It Played.
Yep.
You consider him a good one to watch. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Now, the truth is, and I should probably just watch everything he does, but I'll usually watch him play things that I want to learn how to play. So if he's done a Watch It Played on something, that's what I normally watch. But he's done like through Mansions of Madness and things like that recently of second edition. And I've heard a lot of good things about that. I have the first edition version. The difference is second edition uses an app to do a lot of the fiddly bits. And I've heard really, really good things. And I'm actually tempted to go out and grab it. But I haven't played Mansions of Madness 1 in so long that I'm like, well, can I really justify it? I got to get these guys to play it. You know, so sometimes I will decide not to get something just because I don't think it would be really hard to get to the table.
Right.
Actually, I think it was Dungeon Saga. Today I saw, and I'm like, I really want to play this game, but it's a one versus mini game. So you have like the dungeon controller and then the group of players playing in it. And we never play one versus mini. I have like three other ones that I really want to play with you guys. So I'm like, all right, I'm not going to get that, even though I want it, even though it's got,
because you know, you've got those other ones that you need to get through.
Yep.
Right.
So, but what a couple things I'll look for, if it's a Dice Tower Essentials game, I'll almost buy it sight unseen. I figure Tom Vassell doesn't really put essentials on things that aren't good. Mm. Even if I don't like it, it's going to be good enough to own for my standard of owning games.
Right.
Which, again, we've mentioned.
Crazy Town.
Really, yeah, Crazy Town. But that's one thing. That's how I found Deception. You know, I never heard anything about it, but it had the Dice Tower logo on it. And then I turned it over and it's like, you know, deduce who's doing it. I'm like, all right, I must own this. So Dice Tower is a big one, and Board Game Geek is the other big one. I'll go to the Board Game Geek, and I'll look at like the top 50 trending things, and then I'll go and do a little bit more research on those. A lot of them are Kickstarter games, and then you kind of watch the videos, and then they'll have that link to review sites that have that. And that's where I really decide whether or not I'm going to kickstart something, is how well received that game is in the public, because I haven't played it and I can't play it. And you just have a few playthroughs on, online.
Right.
So let's see. He asks another question here. The last two are kind of around D&D. How much does it cost for you to host a D&D party, and any plans to do a video podcast or a podcast of one of your D&D nights? So we haven't had a D&D night in a long time. We've only talked about role-playing once. I do want to do a full D&D episode, and I am working on a D&D spinoff podcast.
We also talked a lot about the birthday party D&D.
We did talk about that.
Yeah.
Yes. So that, well, how much did that cost me? That was mostly printer ink. I printed up some pre-made characters and said, okay, let's go. I did give him a starter box for Dungeons & Dragons, which I think I got off Amazon for like $26 or something like that. That's one of those things that it's, you know, it's kind of a nice gift if you're going to go and do a D&D party to leave enough material behind for them to actually play. But mostly, I mean, heck, I would have done those kind of things for free.
Yeah.
But I don't mind getting paid for it too, actually. If I could make a living out of, you know, being running D&D parties, that would be like a dream job. I'd be like all about that. Or any really board game party for all. 10-year-olds playing board games, I could totally get that
going. So if anyone out there wants to pay Chris for services, you can get us at tabletopgamecorp.com.
Yep. And more often than not, I'm going to leave the games behind because I don't need to bring them back here. I have enough. And plans to do a video podcast. This is like the third time I think we've been asked to do this.
Yeah, we need to get on this.
I was actually just talking to a friend yesterday. We did an escape room.
Oh,
actually, it was a John Dillinger escape
room. I'm
dying
to do that. We all need to do one.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
All right, I'm it. But I was talking to a friend of mine, Mark, and I think it was Mark, and he was saying how if we were to just basically videotape us recording and put that on YouTube. It's like not every, like podcasts are give or take. You either listen to podcasts or you don't, but everyone's clicked on a YouTube video somewhere, whatever those words are. but like just watching us record, it could be interesting. There's a few podcasts that are out there that are like that, and I've actually come across a few. So I don't know if there's enough interest and Kitty's okay, you know, with being
I just
video.
Need a heads up. There was that one day where you're like, yeah, we're going to do a video. It's like, not today. Hair in a messy bun. Today I'm wearing Spencer's clothes. I'm just...
It's fine. You look fine. You don't need to worry about it.
It's winter in Chicago. We're all wearing coats right now I have to turn the heat off when we record. Otherwise, you can hear it in the background.
It's like this
lovely, like...
Howling.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for sending in questions. And like I said, if we didn't get to your question, we are going to be moving it forward.
Yeah.
Please, excited. Anyone else, send us questions. Like I said, we're going to make this a regular top of the podcast segment. We will limit this to probably 2 to 5 minutes. It's not going to be like taking things over, but we want this to be a community like that we can share, that we can talk to you and you can talk back to us. So normally at the end of the podcast, at this point, I would ask you to tell us what you think. So actually, tell us what you think. If you think we answered a question completely wrong, you totally disagree with us, or even if you do agree with us, send us an email, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com, and we will certainly put you on the air, most likely.
He's stumbling over himself because I think he realizes he's like, you know, going into my territory of the outro now. You're trying to get me out of a job here? Is this notice? Yeah, you're not needed anymore, Josh.
I know how to read myself.
We've had enough of your British accent. Yeah, exactly.
All right, Josh. Well, why don't you do that then?
Hell yeah. Well, thank you for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach us directly on Twitter @tabletopgametalk. And I'm @Josh's Blonde. Chris is @GameMasterChris. And Kitty is @Kittenow. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and Twitter, or even better, sharing or retweeting our posts. Until next week, when we talk about collectible card games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.